Welcome to On the Middle East, Al Monitor's podcast on the big stories in the region. My name is Amran Zaman, and I'll be discussing the recent flare-up in Nagorno-Karabakh, a contested majority Armenian enclave that is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan. This week, Azerbaijani forces secured the effective collapse of the self-declared Republic of Artsakh that is solely recognized by Armenia. The ethnic Armenian entity has run the region since the early 1990s. That is when Armenia defeated Azerbaijan in a bloody war over Nagorno-Karabakh. But in 2020, with the help of Turkey and Israel, Azerbaijan won back much of Karabakh and other territories that were occupied by Armenia. There is mounting worry that Azerbaijan's next move will be to occupy parts of Armenia in order to cut it off from Iran, potentially triggering a regional conflagration. With us here to explain what is at stake and where Turkey, Israel and Russia stand on these issues is Benjamin Pogosyan, the director of the Center for Political and Economic Strategic Studies in Yerevan. So welcome to our program, Benjamin. It's so kind of you to make the time to join us today.
Hello, Ambery, and thank you for having me.
So, Benjamin, can you please bring us up to date with the latest? What is happening in Nagorno-Karabakh right now?
Okay, what is happening in Nagorno-Karabakh right now? And in the last 9 months, starting from December 2022, is Azerbaijan's effort to force Nagorno-Karabakh Armenians to accept its demands and to accept Azerbaijani jurisdiction by using blockade, by using efforts to cut any supply of food and other basic goods to Nagorno-Karabakh, imposing blockade on the Lachin corridor, which is the only way which connects Nagorno-Karabakh with Armenia after November 2020 trilateral statement, which itself ended 44-day Nagorno-Karabakh war started on September 27, 2020.
So basically, though, the Azerbaijanis claim that this was an environmental protest. They had these people brought in who were supposedly organizing a sit-in. But as you said, it very rapidly became clear it wasn't about this mining activities that these environmentalists, quote unquote, were supposedly objecting to, but rather, as you say, a sort of underhanded way of trying to basically bring Karabakh to its knees and get Armenia to acknowledge that Karabakh is very much officially a part of Azerbaijan, which indeed, of course, is how the rest of the world views things. But what exactly is it that Azerbaijan wants Armenia to do? Because Pashinyan, the prime minister, has pretty much said, yes, Karabakh is yours. And what he's holding out for, it seems, is some ethnic rights for the majority ethnic Armenian community there. So what does Aliyev actually want?
You are right. In October 2022, Armenian Prime Minister Pashinyan signed a statement in Prague, along with President Aliyev, the President of European Council Charles Michel, President of France, accepting that Nagorno-Karabakh is part of Azerbaijan, and then reiterated this position in May 2023 during Brussels negotiation with President Aliyev, facilitated by Charles Michel, and again in July 2023, again in Brussels, negotiation with President Aliyev, facilitated by Charles Michel. So what Pashinyan did was not very well welcomed by many Armenians, let's put this way, both in Armenia and the diaspora. But Pashinyan's vision is that if we want to have peace and stability in South Caucasus, if we want to have stable environment around Armenia, we should normalize relations with Azerbaijan and with Turkey. And the only way to do that is to settle the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict also recognizing Karabakh as part of Azerbaijan. But what now President Aliyev wants, as far as I understand, it rejects any possibility for any international presence in Nagorno-Karabakh to secure rights of Armenians, and also President Aliyev rejects any possibility of negotiations with Nagorno-Karabakh Armenians about, say, rights and security. The problem is that Prime Minister Pashinyan accepted that Nagorno-Karabakh is part of Azerbaijan, but we have 120,000 Armenians which live in Nagorno-Karabakh and which were in conflict with Azerbaijan in the last 35 years. And during the last 35 years, many terrible things happened, including violations, crimes against humanity, several wars launched by Azerbaijan. And now, simply to go to these people and say, okay, forget 35 years of history, everything now will be okay, just receive Azerbaijani passports without any special rights, without any international involvement, and you will live happily in Azerbaijan as Azerbaijani citizens, this simply may not work, regardless of what Armenian government is doing. Now, President Aliyev says that, okay, Nagorno-Karabakh Armenians have only two options. Either to accept Azerbaijani passports without any status inside Azerbaijan, without any status inside Azerbaijan, without any guarantees that their rights will be protected, either they should accept Azerbaijani citizenship and Azerbaijani passports, or they should leave. But people in Nagorno-Karabakh, who their ancestors lived in these territories for several thousand years, they are telling, okay, but why we should leave our homeland? And yes, we may discuss the possibility to be part of Azerbaijan, but look, what Azerbaijan did to Armenia in the last 35 years, and what are the guarantees that this will not be repeated in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. The issue is here that both Armenia, but especially the Armenians living in Nagorno-Karabakh, they say that we are ready to negotiate with Azerbaijan. We are ready to hear what Azerbaijan is telling, but just not tell us either receive Azerbaijani passports without no real guarantees of their safety or move from your homeland. This is not going to be accepted by Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh, even if, for whatever reasons, Armenian government will accept this solution. At the end of the day, this is not the issue of Prime Minister Pashinyan or Republic of Armenia government. This is the issue of 120,000 people who are living in Nagorno-Karabakh and who are telling we are not going to leave our homeland, but also we are not going to accept Azerbaijani offer to receive Azerbaijani passports without any guarantees that we are not going to be killed or we are not going to be forced to leave.
So this is a really very difficult situation in the end, because what kind of leverage ultimately do the people of Karabakh have, or Armenia itself? Armenia looks pretty isolated to me. And one of the gambles that your prime minister made was that if he could start dialogue with Turkey, Turkey could somehow engage positively in this process. And, you know, given its influence over Azerbaijan, let's face it, if it were not for Turkey, perhaps Azerbaijan would not have won that last war. But that gamble doesn't seem to be paying off, because if anything, it seems Turkey is encouraging Azerbaijan in its hawkishness, in its obduracy, and indeed also encouraging Azerbaijan with its other demand, which is to open this corridor between Nakhichevan and Baku that would effectively cut off Armenia from Iran.
Regarding the leverages, first of all, Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh, 120,000 people, what leverage they have? Not much, especially if they should resist 8 million Azerbaijan. But still, there is a Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Army, and people are determined there to fight. Of course, we all understand that if Azerbaijan takes Nagorno-Karabakh and no one intervenes, neither Armenia nor anyone else, yes, Nagorno-Karabakh Armenians may resist 1 day, 3 days, 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe 1 month, but at the end of the day, there will be a slaughter of Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh. But let's not forget, first, We have Russian peacekeepers in Nagorno-Karabakh. What will be Russia's reaction if Azerbaijan launches large-scale attack to finish with Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh? Big question mark. Russia itself is in a complicated situation, but still, beside Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Army, we have Russian peacekeepers. Regarding Armenia, yes. Military balance is in favor of Azerbaijan, which bought and continues to buy a huge amount of weapons from Turkey, from Israel, partly from Pakistan. And definitely, military balance is in favor of Azerbaijan. And yes, Armenian government is doing everything to normalize relations with Azerbaijan and Turkey to have peace in the region. But if there will be large-scale massacre of Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh, no one can argue that Armenian state and Armenians living in Armenia will simply sit and watch how Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh are being killed. Regarding Turkey's position, yes, there were hopes in Armenia that first Turkey will move forward to normalize relations with Armenia without any preconditions, and without preconditions that normalization may happen only after Armenia signs peace agreement with Azerbaijan. And also there were hopes that Turkey may use its influence over Azerbaijan to somehow also convince President Aliyev that, look, Armenia agrees that Karabakh should be part of Azerbaijan, but Armenia cannot agree that Armenians are going to be slaughtered or going to live as a third, fourth, or fifth sort of citizens without any basic dignity. Please start meaningful negotiations to secure rights of Armenians who live in Azerbaijan. Unfortunately, Turkey did neither first thing nor second thing. So Turkey still clearly states that there is a precondition. Armenia-Turkey normalization is possible only if Armenia signs peace agreement with Azerbaijan. And Turkey rejects any possibility to convince President Aliyev to discuss any options for real guarantees of rights and security of Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh. So currently we are in a sort of impasse when Armenian government made significant concessions and made steps which are politically very harmful. Just a few days ago, we had the municipal elections in Yerevan, capital of Armenia, and approximately 45% of population of Armenia lives in Yerevan. It's almost half. And if immediately after the Velvet Revolution, Pashinyan's party in the same Yerevan municipal elections won 80% of votes, 2 days ago, Pashinyan party received only 32.5% of votes, losing hundreds of thousands of voters in the capital Yerevan, which is another sign that Pashinyan's policy to recognize Karabakh as part of Azerbaijan is not welcomed by a significant majority of Armenians in Armenia. But despite all this, Prime Minister decided to push forward this peace agenda. But again, no one would expect that even current Prime Minister, who is publicly stating that my vision is a peaceful and stable South Caucasus when Armenia has normal relations with Azerbaijan and Turkey. But it does not mean that the current prime minister is okay to see that Armenians are being killed in Nagorno-Karabakh or being pushed away from Nagorno-Karabakh. And as I mentioned, regardless of what the prime minister itself thinks and what his vision is, the majority of Armenians in Armenia and absolute everyone in Nagorno-Karabakh will never accept this vision that either we should suffer without any dignity, without any rights, or we should leave Nagorno-Karabakh. And let's not forget that, unfortunately for us, Azerbaijan has a huge record of mistreatment towards other ethnic minorities in Azerbaijan, Lezgins, Talysh, and others, and also towards its own citizens. Simply go to the reports of the US State Department or any credible international organizations like Human Rights Watch, Freedom House, and etc. And you will see terrible stories, what's happening inside Azerbaijan against ethnic Azerbaijanis and against other ethnic minorities who are citizens of Azerbaijan. In these circumstances, simply to say to Armenians, okay, receive Azerbaijani passport and live happily in Azerbaijan, it sounds more like a mockery.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the external actors here. You mentioned Russia, and as you say, Russia is in a very sticky position at the moment because of Ukraine. And obviously, Azerbaijan has become more important in the light of the fact that Russia is able to sell its oil through Azerbaijan, marketed as Azeri oil. And therefore, you know, it has to keep Aliyev on an even keel. At the same time, we, as you said, Turkey is clearly not stepping up to the plate in terms of playing a constructive role here. Then we have Iran, of course. Can we talk about Iran a little bit? And of course, speaking to my point about this other part of Armenia that is clearly coveted by Azerbaijan.
Iran's policy in South Caucasus is very clear. First, Iran is against any change of borders, including change of borders of Armenia, through military or non-military means, to establish the land corridor from Azerbaijan via Nakhchivan to Turkey. And Iranian leadership, including Supreme Leader Khamenei, stated very clearly that Iran will not tolerate the closure of its land border with Armenia. Let's not forget that it's not only land border between Iran and Armenia. It's land border between Eurasian Economic Union and Iran. And Iran and Eurasian Economic Union are going to sign a free trade agreement, and Armenia is a member of Eurasian Economic Union. So it's not only about bilateral Iran-Armenia relations. Second, Iran is absolutely unhappy to see growing Azerbaijani ties in defense, security. Iran believes that Azerbaijan effectively allows Israel to use its territory for different kind of anti-Iranian activities. Thus, Iran is concerned that its adversaries may use the existence of 20-25 million Azeri-speaking population in Iran as a leverage to further destabilize the situation in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And in this context, if Azerbaijan opens the so-called Zanguldar corridor via Armenia, which will link Azerbaijan to Nakhchivan and Turkey, then entire northern Iran will be surrounded by Turkic population. It will be Turkey, it will be Nakhchivan, populated by Azeris, it will be Armenian Sunni under Azerbaijani control, and then it will be Azerbaijan up to Caspian Sea. So all these are the threats to the vital Iranian interests. But again, Iran was very clear that Iran will not tolerate any change of borders, including change of borders of Armenia, which may threaten or jeopardize Iran-Armenia land border, Iran-Eurasian Economic Union land border. And in 2021, in 2022, and also in 2023, Iran launched large-scale military drills along Iran-Azerbaijan and Iran-Nakhchivan borders, sending signals to Azerbaijan that if Azerbaijan launches military attack against Armenia to open by force the so-called Zangezur corridor, then Iran also may intervene militarily, which may have a spillover effects and trigger a huge regional war in West Asia. And I believe that bigger players, including the European Union, the United States, and Russia, I'm not sure that anyone is interested in another regional war in Europe's neighborhood, in West Asia, while we've seen the terrible tragedy unfolding in Ukraine.
Absolutely. But again, it's a very complex dynamic at play because, you know, when you look at it, at least on the face of things, the actors that seem to be defending Armenia, namely, well, Russia to some extent, it's kind of playing its usual double games, but also Iran. And then on the other hand, you have Israel on the side of Azerbaijan. So when you're sitting in the United States Congress and the sort of Congress people who typically do support Armenia have a, you know, ethnic Armenian population that doesn't like the current Armenian government because of how, you know, sort of yielding Pashinyan appears to be on all of these issues, it kind of gets, as I said, very, very complicated. And it's tragic that it would have to take conflict, you know, people actually dying for people to be mobilized. What needs to happen right here and now for us to not get to that point?
I believe the only way to overcome this cycles of violence is to somehow to convince the Azerbaijani leadership that they should be satisfied from the fact that Armenia is ready to think Nagorno-Karabakh is part of Azerbaijan, and they should think how they can find solutions to secure rights of Armenians who will live in Azerbaijan as an Azerbaijani citizen. Again, what Armenian government did, this was a huge change of tradition of Armenia, because starting from 1988, when Nagorno-Karabakh conflict began during the Soviet last years of the Soviet Union, Armenia's tradition was very clear. Nagorno-Karabakh cannot be part of Azerbaijan. Now, Armenian government, it says that yes, Nagorno-Karabakh can be part of Azerbaijan, but if Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh, as an Azerbaijani citizens, may live securely and their dignity will be protected. This is a huge opportunity, but now ball is on Azerbaijan court. If Azerbaijan leadership squanders this opportunity, yes, now they are militarily in a stronger position. They may launch a large-scale attack against Nagorno-Karabakh. Again, we don't know what Russia's answer will be, but also we know that now both Azerbaijan and Turkey are much more important for Russia than before February 2022, for different reasons. To support, to avoid Western sanctions, also Azerbaijan can provide a land route for Russia to Iran, highways, railways, and via Iran, Russia may reach Asian markets, which is very important as Russia tries to diversify its trade routes from west to east. So yes, Azerbaijan may launch a large-scale attack, and at the end of the day, it may force Armenians to leave Nagorno-Karabakh, killing many of them. But this will not bring peace and stability in the South Caucasus. This simply will perpetuate the cycle of violence, because then many in Armenia, and also in Armenian diaspora, will put all their efforts to strengthen Armenia militarily, and this is a recipe for another war between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Another war in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, nobody can fail. And this means that South Caucasus will be one of the regions of the world always mired in conflict, war, human sufferings. Is this possible scenario? Definitely. This is possible scenario. And unfortunately, we know that there are many regions in the world which are mired in conflicts for decades. Middle East, some parts of Africa, some parts of South Asia. But again, this is not what average people and also politicians should dream about. So let's see. My understanding is that current Armenian government did everything which it could, even more than what it could, to prevent such future of the region. But again, now the decision is up to Azerbaijan leadership. If they made right decisions, South Caucasus would have more or less stable and prosperous future. If they are going to make wrong decisions, I am afraid for decades to come, South Caucasus will be associated with conflicts, human suffering, deaths, and instability.
Well, let's definitely hope that it doesn't come to that. And of course, we need to remind our audience that Armenia is a democracy and that the current government in power was elected in free and fair democratic elections. Whereas in Azerbaijan, of course, it's an entirely different situation, which makes Azerbaijan itself inherently unstable. And oil, as we know, does not last forever. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for joining us today. Let's hope that peace prevails and hope to have you on our program again soon sometime to talk about happier things.
Thank you, Amber.
And this brings us to the end of this week's episode of On the Middle East. I do hope you enjoyed my conversation with Benjamin. Thank you for tuning in and have a great week.